Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
Hey, everybody. What's going on? Happy Wednesday. Happy almost mid-October. Welcome to Call Center Confidence. I am the Cutter in the formula, and welcome Mr. Katt to the show.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cutter. How are you? You good?
I'm good. It's interesting. It's interesting. You know, for some people that know, I moved to Florida. It's been about 5 months ago now. So it's interesting heading into fall, having grown up in the West Coast, California, pretty much my whole life, and fall, like, everything's changing, the season's changing, everything's happening, to be in Florida, where I saw a funny meme that the only thing, you know, it's fall when the license plate colors change because everyone's flocking to Florida, I guess. So yeah, it's interesting. It's fascinating. And that it's, you know, beach weather in October. So yeah, it's all good. Nice.
Hey, well, look, it's beach weather for me every single day of the year, so I'm not going to complain about that one. Just rubbing it in, you know, no snow, 35 degrees every single day, maybe 5 minutes of rain. That's about it.
I love it. Definitely not rubbing that in for anybody. So, super excited for the show and what we have going on today. Also super excited and grateful and thankful for Gabe Leal, who I know is tuning in. He just put some comments in there on the show, and I appreciate his support. I was actually on his show, I don't know, how long ago was it, Gabe? Like a year ago, and super fun, great energy, love his live show. He actually posted something today, which I appreciate, like a lineup of all these shows happening today. So I appreciate his support and just helping people use LinkedIn for what it's there for, is to build up professionally, personally, grow, develop. And, you know, I'm glad that we're a part of that. So thank you for the support, Gabe.
No, absolutely, Gabe. Thanks for joining us. I'll try and keep the accent for you. I won't do any fake, dodgy American accents. I'm not really an accent person, but I'll keep my British one in there anyway. So for all of those who are listening from over the pond, thanks for joining. I know Rich and Co are joining as usual at some point, so we shall probably see some comments from them. But don't forget, guys, whether you're listening live or watching live, should I say, across any of our social platforms or website, we are still post live on the podcast, on the website, YouTube, Instagram, you name it. We're all over everywhere we can be with Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Katt. What was I doing there? Were you drumming?
I was counting off all the places and all the platforms and thinking about all the things where we're at and taking over the globe when it comes to call center and confidence. And, you know, please, if you're watching this and you're tuning in, just say hello, say where you're from. We'd love to see how far this reaches, where this goes. And of course, if you're in this space and you think this would be valuable to your network, please like it. Please share it. Now I sound like a YouTube. Please like and share, subscribe, hit the bell icon so you get all the notifications right when they happen. Although this is being broadcast to YouTube, so maybe that applies. But please, and then if you have questions, sales-related things, you know, especially related to our topic today, and you have some challenges, you want to bring them up, we are happy to go on tangents and answer any questions that come up. That's super fun for us. So, Oliver, what are we talking about today? I feel like we should just keep talking about the same thing over and over again, because I really don't want to do anything different.
No, and do you know what? That's what it's all about. It's not about changing. That's exactly what it's about. So we're definitely not doing anything different today. We're talking about change. Okay. And last week, you know, we talked about change from personnel standpoint. We talked about change from a leadership standpoint, new projects, new systems, new tools. And it raised a lot of questions. And we only got a fraction of where we really wanted to talk about. We hit some really good notes, especially when it comes to expectations of new leaders coming in, setting the tone for, you know, direct reports who are going to be getting new leaders. And it's a big, as we say, change. So why change? And why is it important to discuss? Because I think from our standpoint, Jason, I think you and I kind of, you know, we sing from the same page when it comes to a lot of this stuff. I know we like to agree. We also disagreed last week for you know, the first time in a while, which was fun. So if you missed last week, go and check it out on the podcast. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know, at the end of the day, change happens for a reason. I mean, there was a fantastic post by a friend of mine today, Jared Robin, on LinkedIn, and he was talking about change and putting new tools in, and would you go rogue to do things? And I'm going to talk more about that a little bit later on today. But I think it's important to understand why things change, why we need to be prepared for it, but also at the same way, and this is something we talked about last week, is not to be afraid of change. People can fear the unknown, but don't be afraid of change. Change can always be good if it's looked upon the right way. Would you agree with that?
I would. And, you know, the biggest thing that jumps out when you bring that up and we start in that position is if we look at it from a different perspective, when you're in sales, which is what we're talking about, and we're talking about organizations that are, you know, sales focused and call centers that are sales focused, because that's what you and I mostly do. When you're selling or helping someone else buy and you're in the act of persuading them to move forward, technically you are wanting them to change, right? The act of buying something new equals change. Now, some people have a tolerance for that and they're okay with change as a customer. Some of them, it takes a lot of convincing. Some of them aren't going to move. And the reason why I say that it requires them to change, because if it's something unknown, something they haven't bought before or experienced before, by definition, it's different, and different equals change. Some people, again, are very open to it and okay with it, such that maybe they just order online. They don't need any help. They're not worried about it. It's an easy decision. That's simple. What's interesting is when I see organizations and salespeople who are stuck in their ways and they're not open, which I've been talking a lot about this week on a lot of podcasts I've been on. It's like how openness is the number one trait I look for when hiring people and when I or help organizations hire people is openness, not persistence, not grit. Like those things are important. But if you're persistent and gritty and don't stop, but not open, then what is it that you're persistently moving towards? If, you know, it's probably your own agenda. So what's interesting is when salespeople aren't open and then they're trying to sell to someone and convince them to be open to make a change, it doesn't work. And in fact, the more open the company is to change, I feel like that translates even energetically down to being able to help customers buy. What do you think about that philosophical kind of subconscious perspective?
I love it. And the reason why I love it is a point that I'm going to refer to right now and target somebody specifically who I know is watching, who Byron's just put a great show, really enjoying it. Byron, how you doing? Byron's based out in South Africa. And I know for a fact, Byron has a team of telesales agents that are out there selling products and services to customers and trying to change their customers' current providers of whatever services they're buying to something else. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think you have to be open to that kind of change. You have to have that mindset, especially as a sales representative, because if you are not in that mindset, how can, as I'm stealing your own words here, how can you convince somebody else to? And I think that's where you have to be accepting of what they're saying. And, you know, as a prime example, outbound sales agents, majority of them have sales scripts because it's the way they work, it's the way they operate, or they have some kind of outbound strategy. Now, when it comes to that strategy, if you can't see where sometimes something's not working or tweak it or change it, then are you ever going to improve it? And it's not the same. It's the same, you know, one size fits all in sales. That's definitely not the case with a pitch, with a presentation, with fact finding, with discovery questions, closing techniques. Everybody is different. So you have to be open to what's put in front of you at the right time. And, you know, guaranteed, you can't always prepare for that. So your mind has to be open for what's coming at you. And you have to be at least prepared to listen to that and kind of respond appropriately. And that is you being open to change, because that closing technique that you've used for the last 100 people is not going to work today with person number 101. And that goes the same when you apply it to the tools that they use, the technology that they're actually got in front of them, the people they're speaking to, the demographics, the personalities. Everybody's different, right? I'm not going to respond to something the way that somebody else might respond to you, Jason. And that's the same that we live in day-to-day life. And I think if we can take some of that into a sales environment and give it to some of our frontline sales teams to use or to be at least prepared for, then I think it's something to take away. And it's the same way that I've trained a group of sales agents here, there, and everywhere. And, you know, I always love the ones when you try and do role plays with them and they try and think, oh, you know, what's next in the row of questions that they've got to ask me. And I'm like, guys, there is no what's next. It's what's been said to you to respond to. And you have to change your approach every single time. And I think that's something that I think, especially when you put new salespeople into that environment, is they try and stick to that routine. What did I ask next on the last one? Then to the next question, then to the next question. Forget it. Throw it out the window. Have a list of questions that you've got to get through one way or another.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that really comes down into some fundamental stuff is do you as an organization, do you as a leader, does your team have a fixed mindset or a growth mindset? Like, are you fixed in what you're doing and what you believe and what you think is true and right and the best practices? Or do you have a growth mindset? Are you open? Are you curious? Are you willing to learn? Are you willing to put the ego aside and say, I might not know everything, and for me to do more, I'm going to have to learn more and grow and develop. And the reason I mention organization and leaders and then salespeople is that it generally starts at the top. Right? Like if the organization just thinks this is the way we've always done it and this is how it's done, then that will filter through. That will be in the recruiting, the people, not just the people who are hired, but the people who end up staying are the people who fit that model of that fixed mindset. Yeah. Like what you're saying, which is, okay, let's role play. Okay, so I'm fixed on, and I've seen this and it just drives me bonkers, probably like yourself, which is, okay, so that salesperson is just asking their questions independent of what's being answered. It's almost like they're just checking a box. I got to ask this question, then I got to ask this question, I got to ask this question. It doesn't really matter what you say. It doesn't matter what your answers are, because I know where I'm going and I know I have this fixed path versus adapting, responding, active listening, being open, being curious, those kind of things, right?
Yeah. No, I agree. So look, I want to touch on what we talked about last week. I'm going to throw it 15 minutes earlier because I threw you a curveball at 5:30 last time. I'm doing it at 4:15.
Oh, Jason, shoot.
Jason's top tips on his final points that he's just raised. Come on, 3 top tips. If somebody was to take that away in a nutshell right now, and I'm giving you time to think about it, 3 Jason Cutter's creative content. I don't know. We're gonna come up with something.
we'll get the marketing department to work on those. You know, I think the top 3 tips is, one, as an organization, the biggest thing is you've got to have a set mission, vision, and core values that direct everybody within the organization, because then that will filter down. And hopefully somewhere in there is the openness and adaptability and being in a state of evolution and wanting to change and wanting to grow. You've got to have that. Mm-hmm. Then within there, are the people involved? Do they have a growth mindset or do they have a fixed mindset? Where are you at? How does that look when you get feedback? Are you open to change? And then what are you asking your team to do that fits to how they're asking the customers to do? Because if they're hypocrites, we never change. This is the way I always do it. Now I'm going to go out there and try to sell someone on doing something new and buying a new product. That's garbage and it's not going to work. So those are the things. It has to be in alignment.
Love that. Love those 3 points. So the values, it's the kind of the people growth and mindset, and what you're asking your team to do. 3 top tips. Fantastic. So values is something that I really want to talk about, because companies have values and Some people stick to them. Some people don't stick to them. Some people just have them, as I think we've even spoken about before. It's just those 5 points on the wall that the company likes to have as their company mantra, and nothing ever fits in with them, which are pointless. And when companies have these, how valuable do you think company values are? And should companies look to change them as their company moves forward?
So I think there's a couple of things. One is, even if they don't have those five words or phrases on the wall, every company has a mission, a vision, and values. Even if they're unstated, they're there, right? There's somebody mm-hmm. that founded the organization based on something they believe and where they want to go. The problem is, a lot of organizations, it's only in the founder's head or the CEO's head, and it's not verbalized and it's not put out there, and then it's not stuck to. And then I think the other big thing is that I see organizations, they're either afraid of documenting that or putting that down, or thinking like, if we do this, this is what we'll always believe. And what happens if we have to change or adapt, or, you know, change, you know, the market changes, or there's a global pandemic that affects the way business is done and where people can sit, right? Either in the office or everyone has to go home. And like, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the biggest things is understanding that the core values, the mission, the vision, should adapt and change at some level, not drastically. You don't want to say like, we believe in these values, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, we've changed our mind, we actually believe in these other things, because that is painful and that's going to be too harsh of a transition. But I think it should evolve. I think it should change to a certain point, because you're going to hit some milestones in the company when it goes from five people to 10 to 50 to 100 to 500. And then what's going to happen is it's going to change a little bit, and then it's going to need to tighten up so it's super crystal clear. Like, mm-hmm. here's what we believe, and everyone needs to be rowing the right direction. Because if you have 500 people rowing different directions, that's really painful. If you have five mm-hmm. people rowing different directions, you can kind of manage that. But at scale, everything has to actually tighten up. And then I've got a phrase that I will throw out there that will help with this. But I know you want to say something on this, so go ahead.
No. I don't know. I've worked with companies that I've done both. I think what you've said there, you've highlighted some really key points. I just want to talk about, there's a company I worked for back in the late noughties. So what was it, like 2009, 2008, something like that. And they abolished their five or six values, mission statements, or whatever it was. Yeah. And they just came up with one. And what I mean by that was like one. It was like O-N-E, or the number one. And that was it for the mission statement. And it was the call center itself and the business wanting to do, you know, one of everything. So it'd be like, you know, one call resolution. So every time a customer called in, they would solve that problem on the first time. You know, and they had a number attached to it. They wanted like a 98% succession rate on that. They had technical problems. First, you know, one call for this, one call for that. And it was, everything was done as ones. Project launches was ones, and you revisited it and adapted it and changed it. And I think something that simple worked really well, because everybody realized that actually, do you know what? All it takes sometimes is one call. All it takes is one resolution. All it takes is one fix. And it was just really simple. And I think when you simplify it down to something like that, and I'm not saying it has to be that simple, but if you break it down, and it's not, I worked for a company that had something like eight core values. And I mean, could you remember those eight? Could you remember the words? And I think it was an anagram or something. And again, it's escaped me because I can't even remember what it was. But when you have something like that, it's like a nice to have, but nobody really believes in it. And I think that's why when I talked about the values and I wanted to bring about changes, companies should change with the times, because you know what? Something like that, I think it's not outdated, but it definitely needs a refresh, if you know what I mean. But I want to hear your statement, your point that you were going to make at the end of there. Come on, kick in there. I'm excited.
Well, and on your point about simplifying, I think that's the key. I think most people, as they kind of move forward in time, and then organizations as they mature, I think they realize mm-hmm. what's more and more important to them and what's more specific. And I think that's the key for them, is to get simple. And I love that. It's funny because I was at the Florida DMV a couple of weeks ago, just dealing with things and car stuff. And they had something on the wall that was like their values. And I think it was like a 9-letter word. And it wasn't even the first letter of mm-hmm. each word was in the thing. It was like an O here and an N here in the middle. And it was so confused. It seemed great in theory, but like you're saying, like, does anyone know it? And does it make sense? And yeah. I couldn't figure out how it made sense. So, so that was interesting. And I know my internet is rough today. So if I keep freezing, watching.
That's why I was just moving in the background. So people just didn't think you'd paused or anything. I was just kind of like bobbing around.
I'll talk and you just move your lips and we'll do it that way. You can do both parts. So either way, this will be great to podcast material because you can't tell. The biggest thing I was going to mention, and mm-hmm. it's funny because I don't bring this up enough with companies and with the training that I do, but there's a statement I learned years ago, and it's so impactful, especially when we're talking about the subject of change. And it is marry the vision and date the strategy. So marry the vision and date the strategy. What that means as an organization, you're married to that vision. We are going this direction. Here's where we're headed. We want to create this or do this mm-hmm. or serve these people or change the world in this way, right? So you're marrying the vision. And then the other part that's super important is dating the strategy. Because what happens a lot of times is people marry the vision and marry the strategy, or date the vision and marry the strategy. And so they're married to the how instead of the where it's going. And why this is so important is that within sales organizations, what I see a lot of times is that the sales reps feel like they're supposed to be married to the strategy, married to this script, this mm-hmm. lead source, this pricing model, this product that's being offered. And if any of that changes, they feel like that violates what their expectation was, which is here's what we do and here's what we always do. And I want to be able to show up and know exactly what I'm doing every day because that's safe and easier, versus an organization that has a culture where it's like, here's where we're going, how we get there may fluctuate and may change. Yeah. And the best example I always use with this is a road trip. So let's say I'm in Florida and I want to drive to New York. I'm going to marry that vision. My vision is New York City. I want to be in New York City. Here's what I want to do. And here's when I want to be there. How, right? Which is the strategy. I don't know. I have a strategy, but what if there's traffic? What if there's construction? What if I get a flat tire? What if I want to see the world's largest ball of yarn and it's a detour, right? Like that's strategies, that process, right? Like if you've ever gone on a road trip and something goes sideways, that's the strategy. What you don't do is go, I got a flat tire, so I give up. I'm not going to New York, right? Or I got distracted by this rest stop and I'm not going to New York. Right. But that's what happens in organizations where people get married to the strategies and say, if I don't successfully take this one highway all the way there, not stopping, I'm going to throw everything out the window and I give up. And I think that's a huge lesson when it comes to being able to handle change and why the change may happen, which is what you started with.
I love that analogy. I think that's great. And I think, you know, we're coming close to the half past top tip there. You know, you fired a bit early. But I think that's a really good way of looking at it. And I think that's something that a lot of people can take away, is the fact that, if you want to date, it means you can date any way you want. You can do anything you want and you're not restricted. I love that. I love that. I mean, I definitely want to go see the largest ball of yarn, wherever that is. I definitely want a road trip across the US. I'll get there one day, but one day. But I think for anybody kind of wanting to take away something key is don't get too fixated on the journey. And I think that's something that people can really look at to say, look, it's your end goal. How you get there is up to you, because I guarantee you're going to come into roadblocks. You're going to find dead ends. Your sat nav is going to take you in the wrong direction at some times. And that's what you need to remember. And I think some people do get frustrated when those changes happen in the strategy. I've worked with a lot of people that, you know, you can see them get really frustrated and they're not even there at the end. They're not even anywhere near that end result of what they want to achieve. But for example, if something's broken, it's like, you know, you see the frustration rather than, okay, that's broken. How do I fix it? Now, don't get me wrong. When you've had a bad day, you're stressed, you're tired, you're exhausted, you've worked long hours, you're going to get nitpicky at every little thing. You know, you've got a sales target. You're not hitting your sales target yet. You're going to get frustrated. You're going to get agitated. And the problem you've got with something like that is when you do get frustrated and agitated, you make mistakes, which is then going to have a knock-on effect to the next call, the next call, the next call. And before you know it, you end up spiraling out of control. And you probably, as you say, Jason, you end up back where you started because you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I honestly, I think that's a fantastic point. I love that you've raised that on here today. And I think that's going to be a big help to a lot of people. I really do.
Well, thank you for that. And here's what's really interesting, because we can extrapolate this even one step further, which is if you're in sales, going back to the fact that you need your prospective client to embrace change and feel like what you're selling is the safest and best option, right? So you want them to do what your organization may ask you to do at some point, right? But the act of buying requires change. As a salesperson, that is your same directive. Marry the vision, date the strategy. This goes to that fixed versus growth mindset. Meaning, if I'm a salesperson and I'm trying to sell you on the best solution, right? I've determined that you qualify. I can help you. You have problem X, I have solution X, or goal, I can help you achieve goal X, whatever that looks like. I'm now married to the vision, which is the finish line, you as a client. How we get there, the objections, the issues, the obstacles, the money, the contract, the other person that needs to be involved in the conversations, those are all the strategies and weave in and out. And the reason I say that is because if you're a good salesperson, you realize like the path is windy. You can try to go this way with it, but sometimes it's going to go sideways and you have to adapt knowing where the finish line is, what that looks like, where you want to get to. And when you look at it that way, especially from a sales perspective, especially for managers and leaders who were salespeople that moved up, that are now struggling when their bosses say, we need to change. And you're like, I don't want to change. This is what we've always done. Remember that part relative to when you were in sales and what you did with prospective customers and the journey you took them on to get to the destination and not the strategy, and apply that as a leadership thing, because, you know, like I always say, everything in life is sales. And so there's some aspect to that journey that applies in all of it. And the change part applies in all of it.
Hey, it's Oliver Catt of Cutter and Catt, and we'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success that you want. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps between where you are now and where you would like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's anything from training to systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything else in between, email info@callcenterconfidence and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we may be able to help. Now back to Jason and I chatting about call centers.
No, I love it. I love it. So I would say top tips, but I think you've just kind of dropped a few bombs because it is half past the hour. Literally, you're just dropping them today, like knocking them out of the park. Honestly, anybody listening, this is like Value City for free. Look, I agree with that. And I think, you know, I think there is definitely some key takeaways that, you know, I don't want to keep going back to the same thing, because I think, you know, there are other areas we need to look at. But, you know, guys, remember, take that away, listen to Jason's points. I'm not even going to repeat it. Repeat back, go back, rewind on the podcast, and go back and listen in and take that away, because I think a lot of people can learn from something like that. Okay, moving into a different direction with change. So, you know, we've talked about the strategy, we talked about the end goals. Last week, we talked about management and people change. And we even got onto the topic of systems and tool change and getting people's buy-ins when it came to that. You know, there's a lot of different areas that you can cover off when it comes to change. The one thing I really want to talk about is for the frontline sales reps, when something that they're selling changes. And the reason why I talk about that is we've all been in a situation where, I know, we're selling a product and the product changes. We are selling something in a package or a system and that changes. How I want to talk about how that affects somebody's mentality when they're on a route, they're on that strategy, they're on that roadmap, they're going, and all of a sudden they're thrown a curveball that now they can sell this, but they can't sell this anymore, or they need to adapt their pitch to include this, because some of this stuff comes down the track from above where no one's had any say, no one's had any input, and all of a sudden, guess what? It's Wednesday morning, you're going to get a phone call tomorrow because we're now selling a new product or something to that effect. This is something that affects every single salesperson in the world, but I don't think it's spoken about enough. I don't think it's talked about enough. And trainers can sit down and they can work it through with you, and they can go through all these fancy schmancy online video tutorials, training, learning, and things like that. But do you think, Jason, it's quick enough usually? And again, it depends on the product change. It depends on the package change or whatever it is they've had to change in their end to end and day to day. But do you think it's a simple switch, or do you think it's, you know, a bit more work for some of these people working on the front line?
Well, I think, and this is a great topic, I'm super excited to hear Mr. Katz's top tips. So be ready for that.
wait. I got 13 minutes to come up with them. All right.
No. You got until I'm just going to throw it at you like you do to me. I think it depends. I think it depends on the level of change. If it's a small change, that's one thing. If we're talking about the product change, right? You're selling this, now you're selling that. Even if it's going to be in the same type of product set, then that's kind of a big change. And so it should be handled appropriately. I think one thing is, and I see this a lot, where people are not empathetic to what other people are going to be going through when that change happens. So what I've seen is where a leader going the opposite direction of what I was talking about, where leaders are very open to change. The leaders above or somewhere in the organization know that change is important, know that it's all about evolving and succeeding, and that if the business is going to make this change, it's necessary. Then what happens is they just assume everyone is going to be that way and that it's going to be easy for everyone. Because it's easy for me, then it's going to be easy for everyone. And I catch myself with that all the time, because I know for me, I could sell lots of different things, especially if I know why we're selling it and how it's valuable. I can do that. I'm okay with changing. As a consultant, that's the story of my life. Like within one day, I could be talking to multiple organizations, helping multiple different reps in different industries sell different things, like I do it all day, right? That's what I have to be able to do. And so for me, I have a very high level for change and adapting and just knowing the fundamentals I can apply to anything. I have to remind myself that not everyone is me, and I'm here in my position and I do what I do because of the talents I have, but other people, so I have to be empathetic. This new script or this change or this new product. And so I think that's one of the keys. And I think too, it's about, again, having the right people on the team. And if you're a salesperson, right? If you're the salesperson that we're talking about, then A, are you really open to change? And B, always remember you have a choice, right?
Yep.
Like you have a choice. If something changes and it's such a dramatic change, if you don't want to be a part of it, then don't be a part of it, right? If you don't like the new product that's being sold, don't just stay for the sake of staying and stick down miserable or underperform. Just always remember you are in control of your life decisions, and either you can choose to be open and change, or you can choose to leave, but don't just stay in the middle and be disgruntled and ineffective. What do you think? You had 3 minutes warning. So what is Oliver's undisclosed number of tips when it comes to, big change that's coming down the pipe?
Before I jump into my tips, which I have ready, I just want to touch on that kind of final point that you talked about, which was about, if you're not being happy with change, you know, you need to make a decision whether you're on board or you're on the train or you're not on the train, basically. And I think that affects a lot of people a lot of different ways, depending on the level, seniority, tenure, a list of things, right? I've seen it with many companies that I've worked with and for, where I've gone in there and you've got frontline reps, agents, customer service, sales, whatever it might be, especially in a call center environment, where they're going, I'm not happy about this change. I'm not happy about that change. I'm not, and I've had to say to a couple of them, and I've been very honest, because look, I'm not their boss. I'm not HR. I can go in there and say not what I want. There's limitations before I get fired by the client. But my point to that is, I've been honest with the agents who have sat there moaning while I've been coaching them or doing a one-on-one, or I've had a group of people in a session. I've gone, right, guys, look, we're going to talk about this, but I want your feedback on this. And then all of a sudden it's like a bang, bitching session. And I've had to turn around at times and just say, guys, look, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be brutal. Like, I, you know, I'm not the company, but I'm in here to come and help you do whatever it might be. And you've just turned around and just spent the last kind of 5 minutes ranting, which I thought I'd let you get away with rather than stop it straight away. If you're not happy here, don't be here, because at the end of the day, these companies are providing you with a base salary. They're providing you with commission. They're providing you with bonuses. There are so many people out there at the minute fighting for these types of jobs that you're either on the train or you're not. And I guarantee every single person, and this goes all the way up to your senior directors, apart from the owner. Well, even to be fair, it could happen to your owner from time to time. But every single person is replaceable in a company. Nobody is safe. And I think sometimes people forget that. And I don't know whether you've experienced something like that, Jason, or not, but I think, you know, people need to be aware that you can all be told where to go at a moment's notice. So if you're not on the train, go. I mean, look, I'm not going to say what he said, but basically my old boss from, early 2010s era, used to say to people, look, if you're not happy, go and fix cars, go and flip burgers, go and do this, whatever he said, but it was like, just go. It's like, don't moan about it. We're paying you and we're paying you well. And these guys were getting paid well, you know, and that's the thing. But look, that's me. That's my point. Top tips here to come, right? If you are adapting your frontline salespeople, if you are changing their packages, tools, sales tips, whatever it is, they are going out there and you're changing on them. I think the first and the foremost is training, support, and tools, right? This is tip number one. There's a lot to pack into this one. Training, tools, and support. The first one is, if you're going to do training, whether it's face-to-face, whether it's online, you need the right tools in place. Webinar tools, LMS tools, Zoom, GoToMeeting, webinars, whatever it might be. You need to make sure it's done. Secondly, you need to support them through that transition, because it's not always as easy as what people think. And I think we spoke about this. I cannot remember the episode when we spoke about the conscious competence learning matrix. And the problem we have with a lot of managers and trainers in the business is there are four steps in the conscious. I can't draw it like this with my hand, with the conscious competence learning matrix. And everybody starts at level one. Whatever you're doing, they start because they don't know what they don't know. And I think what you need to do is, when you're changing something like this, don't always assume they're at level two. And what level two means essentially is they know what they don't know. They just now need to put it into action. But that's the point. They don't know what they don't know. So always take it right back to the basics. Don't teach them how to suck eggs. But if it's new product, use the right tools, use the right systems, make sure the training is adequate. And not only that, is test them on any changes. Use proof of learnings, use exams, use testing, use training tests, whatever it might be. SurveyMonkey, LMS systems, online, written, Word documents. There are so many tools out there that you can use to train and test your people. Use them and do it the right way. Make sure they get the pass mark you require. And if you don't, go back and retrain them, because ultimately that's what you need to do. I've also worked with some excellent systems in the past. especially when it comes to AI support. And they know after learning you as a person when information starts to leave your brain. And I've worked with one in particular where they'll send you out new content and then the system's AI will kick in, say a week later, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, whatever it determines your learning pattern is, and will actually resend you the content and maybe in a quick test or whatever it might be, just to refresh you on the new material or new training or new product or whatever it might be. So that's the first one, training, support, and testing. That's where it needs to be. The other one for me is kind of coaches when it comes to new product. And a lot of people can bundle coaches into the support functionality from a training. I think training and coaches they can be the same role. They can be split. It depends on the company you're working for. But if you've got people out on the floor, when I talk about coaches, it's not just sales coaches. It's not just trainers. Make sure your business has the right personnel and the personalities on the floor to support that training, to reiterate that message, to go around. Last company I worked for in London, we had sales coaches that would go around and reinforce the training material. Have you read the training? Have you taken the test? All right, quick question. Tell me, what was X, Y, and Z? And it just re-embedded that knowledge that we were trying to get out there. And it showed the agents on the front line that they were getting that support. Okay. And then to sum up those two into one, the third and final tip is repetition. The more the trainers, the managers, and the coaches reintroduce that material to these people, listen to their calls, you know, use your quality teams at the same time to do this, you will reinforce that message and the change so that they get better and better, and it's more quick, it's more competent, and effectively what you're doing is you're increasing their speed to competence and delivery to make sure that whatever they're talking about, whatever they're delivering on the phone goes through in one clean go. That's my top tips. I know they were like 5 minutes long, but there's three of them, probably about seven rolled into three.
Well, I love that list. Anybody, again, and if you watch the replay, popped up on the screen as you went through, I think those were great. I think the biggest thing is that in listening to you, there's a chance people go, okay, well, that's a strategy for training, education, like, how does that really address this issue? How is that really going to help with change? The biggest thing I take away from that is that when you do these things, you're helping someone evolve and change. You're also supporting them in that change. And then you're showing them that there's success when they change and that you're in it there with them instead of here, change this thing, go do it, good luck. Oh, and by the way, if you're not successful, you're in trouble. Right. And I think that's the biggest thing is that there's the change is dictated from on high and says, here, go change. And the organization isn't supporting everyone and saying, we need you to change. And we're going to help you make that strategy shift. Right. We're still married to the vision. We're going to date the strategy. And then here's how we're all in this together. Do I have that right? The strategy there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
No way. I think, you know, what I love about that again is what you're talking about with getting them to change and bringing in all these resources. And I think where you started it too, kind of playing off of what I said, which is people have a choice. I think fundamentally, and this again, might sound like we're talking to frontline salespeople. This is for the managers and leaders as well. Life is too short to do things that you hate to do. If you don't like what you're doing or you don't like the company you're at or the work you're doing, do not put up with it for yourself for any longer than you really need to. Of course, you got to pay bills. You don't want to go down the path of being destitute or homeless or anything like that. You got to make smart decisions. But don't stick in it. If you don't like the change, if you don't like the way the organization has changed or what they're going after or what they're doing, then don't stay in it. It's not going to work for you or them. And that goes for the leaders as well. I see a lot of leaders who they put up with it, but they're not happy about it. And they didn't like where it is now versus where it was before. And then that's just going to make it harder for everyone to be successful.
Yeah. No, I get that. And I think, you know, again, it's what people want to do to achieve that success, and whether they're willing, it boils back to the same thing, whether they're willing to jump on that train or not, support or not. And I think it's a lot of it is down to the individual. You know, and we can help. You know, what's the saying? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And that's the same with change. Is, you know, you can give her everything. Her? I have no idea who I'm talking about. you can give that person whatever it is they need. You can give them all the support in the world, but if they are not open to it, if they are not ready to jump on that bus or buy into the message that you're trying to do, then you are always going to run into barriers. You are always going to work either in silo, or you'll end up leaving, and then you'll end up having to recruit. So it's a pain in the ass for anybody not willing to change. Let's put that on it, shall we?
Yes. And that's it. And I think that's the fundamental thing, which goes to what I was talking about early on with core personality behavior that people must have to be successful, in my opinion, is openness. Fundamentally before anything else, right? Because if you're open, you'll handle the change, you'll handle new things, you'll handle feedback, you'll handle ideas, you'll just be open in general. It's that growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. And then again, and tying this back together now over these two episodes, is as a corporate culture, how do you embrace openness? How do you foster that? How does that fit in with your core values? Because if that's the case, it will be easier for everybody to be open. And then I think there's the fundamental point of the why, right? I think we talked about it last week, but if everyone knows why the change is happening, then it generally will facilitate it and be easier, right? It's kind of like what happened with the pandemic. One of the biggest things I saw that was so amazing was organizations where I saw them pre-pandemic, they didn't like change. The reps didn't like change. They didn't want to do things different. They repelled it. They pushed against changes that happened in one way or another. Pandemic happens. Everything changes. Everyone has to go remote. And I saw so many people that were now in this like wartime mode where it was no longer about their own individual needs and their kind of like their comfort zones. It was like, we've all got to stick together to be successful, even if we go remote. Like, I'm going to get myself set up and I'm going to do this. And there was that moment I saw some like for a few months where everyone's just like, again, wartime mode, because there's a why. Where now it's us versus this other thing instead of us versus ourselves internally. And that was amazing. And then that kind of fades and everyone goes back to, well, now I don't want to change again, or I don't want to do this. But when you have a strong enough why, then most people will be on board with whatever change has to happen.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you on that one. I think, you know, I've worked with a lot of companies that were dead against remote. You know, if you're working remotely or if you're working from home, you're not actually working. And I think that was the mindset for a lot of companies out there. I've been really lucky in the past to work from companies that have supported working from home. As a senior director and manager, I was actually encouraged by one company to say, hey, look, you need like one day a fortnight at least at home to catch up, sanity, do whatever without the distraction. But then on the flip side, I've worked with companies that, as I just said, work from home? No. And then all of a sudden, pandemic, bang, everybody had to work from home. But I think it was an eye-opener for some companies because they saw productivity go up. I mean, don't get me wrong, people were out sick, they had COVID or whatever it might be, but they saw a change in people's working habits. I know when I used to work from home, if I go back to my last job that I worked in London, I used to do, people will laugh at this, I did 2 hours each way commute to work, right? That was my commute to work when I last lived in the UK. So I was on a 6:45 train into London in the morning, and then I was getting home around about 7:30 in the evening. All right, so it was a good 12 to 13 hour day round trip. Would I work till that late when I was working from home? No, but would I start at 6:45 when I normally woke up in the morning? I would start at 6:45 instead of 8:30, quarter to nine, when I normally got into the office. So they were getting more hours out of me in the morning. And I think the same happened with this. And I think companies have realized, and this is a great point that you brought up about the pandemic and change, is I think people have realized that they don't need these fancy offices and things like that. But I think some people from a, I don't want to use the word mindset point of view, but I think people like going into the office again now. I mean, look, I do, you know, I have my own business and I have, you know, two other businesses where I work with, you know, you, for example, and another business partner in another company. And do I like working solo versus working with you and my other business partner? 100%, because you guys keep me sane. and I think that's a good change. Again, I think that's a good point. You realize, you know, some businesses do it, some people, businesses don't. And, you know, I think everybody has to be open to what are the possibilities now.
Well, and I think that point, I'm trying to be supportive that me and the other guy you're referring to help you be sane. I don't know if I've had too many people attribute that to me, but I'll take that as the compliment you meant. But I think this goes into a point that I made a little bit ago, and you know, this might be a good place for us to end this change discussion. But you're talking about everyone went remote because everyone had to for a period. Some were brief, and then some people are going back, some people are not, and then people realizing how much they missed being around their coworkers, other people, what they could learn, what they could get from that, just the interaction, the human interaction. We're a tribal species, right? Like that's how we've gone to this point on the planet, is by being around others, supporting each other, working as a group. That's why we are where we are on the planet. And so I think one of the big things is what I said a little bit ago, which is embrace change, be open to change. But then I think it's key to be very authentic to who you are and what you like and what's true for you, such that if you know that you need or want to be in an office, let's say, for example, and your company is 100% remote, and that's no longer what's best for you, if you're not going to be happy and fulfilled, then maybe you need to make a change, right? Embrace the change as it comes up. I think this is the key, is be open to change. See what it's like. Try new things or be open to that, and then look at it and go, okay, I like that or I don't like that. I can embrace it. I can't. This is me. It's not me. And if it's not you, that's okay. It's better than square peg in a round hole. And I think that's the key as well. It's like, okay, I know I need to be around other people. This isn't working. This company won't do that. We're all remote forever. Maybe I need to find somewhere that I can, or some other outlet or a way to be around my coworkers. Same thing with the sales, right? Right. Here's this new product, or here's this new script. Let me be open. Let me try this. Remember, this is the fundamental thing I've told everybody when it comes to realizing change is important and inevitable. Businesses are in the business of being successful and making money and being there long-term. So if the business says we need to change this thing, it's because they think there's a business need and it's for the best result for the business. So as an employee, instead of fighting it all the time and saying, well, this is dumb, why would you give us a new script? Well, maybe they're giving you a new script or a new product because that makes business sense, right? They're in the business of business. Try it, be open to it. Go through that script, sell that new product, go through the new training, like whatever that looks like. And if you're purely open to it and it's still not a good fit for you, then do something about it then. What do you think about that, Oliver?
I think that is the perfect, perfect way to end today's show. I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, those points are some real key messages that I think people need to actually listen to and understand today. And I don't really want to add anything else to it because I think it would take it away from what it is. And I think that was very well said. I feel emotional.
Thank
I feel
you.
Like I'm right there. That was like a proper little monologue. You like rocked it.
Well, thank you.
Look, guys, look, I think from Jason and I on this change topic, you know, it's going to come up again. We're going to keep talking about this in all of our episodes as we go through and how things evolve and adapt. And I think evolution is key at this point. And that's something that kind of Jason is talking about and what you guys need to think about, especially moving forward in any sales environment, call center, or business that requires change. It doesn't just have to link to call centers, although we're called Call Center Confidence. Remember, we are covering all areas, all aspects of everything here, there, and everything. But look, let's wrap it up, guys. Don't forget, we are going to be live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. EST, and that will never, ever change, even with, as I note, the clock change coming up in a couple of weeks. The only person affected by that is me, because my clocks do not change, unless anybody else.
Or you're the only person not affected by it, maybe.
Yeah, well, obviously me and other people in my region, but the UK's clocks go back. I believe yours go back, and I think, well, I think everybody's goes back at the end of October, beginning of November. Yeah, exactly. We'll send you reminders out. So don't forget, you can sign up. If you want to know and you want to get real-time notifications, go to luma.com/callcenterconfidence.com and you can sign up and get notified via email just before we go live and an hour beforehand as well. Don't forget, we're on LinkedIn at Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Kat. Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, you name it, we're all over the shop. We got a website, which is callcenterconfidence.com. And then last but not least, the podcast. I was like, what else is to say on the list? If you're listening on our podcast, don't forget to subscribe or follow any of these pages for more updates as we go through the week. But from me, Oliver Kat, thank you very much. You can get in touch via all those platforms and the email, which is oliver@thecatalyst.com. And of course, not forgetting Mr. Jason Cutter, which is jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. Jason Cutter. .com and linkedin.com/in/JaceCut. There you go. See, look at that. We're rocking and rolling and closing this out professionally. Gabe, thanks for joining. I hope you enjoyed as well. Byron, we've got other people on the website listening from India, the US, the UK, Ireland, Sweden. We're all over the shop today. So it's great. So thank you very much for tuning in. Appreciate everybody's support. And from me and Jason, we will see you next week. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.